Hi, Dave Emery here. This is For the Record, program number 1063, Socialists for Trump and Hitler, part 3. This is being recorded on March 19th of the year 2019. This program obviously follows up on parts 1 and 2, 1061 and 1062, Socialists for Trump and Hitler, parts 1 and 2. I think due to the fact that I dropped in some large segments from older programs, I think some restatement for purposes of emphasis and clarity might be in order. There has been a lot of discussion about the revival of, quote, socialism, unquote, within the progressive wing of the Democratic Party. Bernie Sanders, whom I spoke about in For the Record 953, and whom I'm going to pick up again in this program, is, in my opinion, a ringer. I don't believe he is aware of that. I think he is being manipulated. However, I think he, when you look at him, and we're going to take a look at him later on in this series, you find that this socialist actually has an awful lot of links to people who are of the opposite stripe. In For the Record 1062, we revisited Tulsi Gabbard, the former number two person in the Democratic National Committee, who resigned to campaign for Bernie Sanders. She is a member of the Sanders Institute and also was bandied about as Bernie Sanders' potential vice presidential candidate. She is basically a left-cover Hindutva fascist, is a member of an offshoot of the Hare Krishna cult, as are her parents, her husband, and her congressional staff. She was looked upon with favor by Steve Bannon and helped to arrange Hindutva fascist Narendra Modi's trip to the U.S. and also when she visited India, was networking not only with Narendra Modi, but the Hindutva fascist RSS. In fact, one Indian paper dubbed her, quote, the darling of the Sangh, S-A-N-G-H. That is a moniker applied to a number of Hindutva organizations, all of them offshoots of the RSS, the fascist organization modeled after Mussolini's Black Shirts network during the pre-World War II period with not only Mussolini's Black Shirts, but also with the Third Reich. And that was the organization that assassinated Mahatma Gandhi. Gabbard also has taken money. She, by the way, is now unannounced presidential candidate herself. She not only has taken money from an organization alleged by knowledgeable observers to have strong links to the Hindutva right in India, but she also sits on the board of directors of a Koch brothers-funded think tank, and that in turn has overlapping links with the neo-Confederate movement. We're going to be taking a look at some of the other people around Bernie Sanders. I noted that Karl Rove's American Crossroads Super PAC helped to fund Bernie Sanders' campaign. And there are a number of things about him, including the fact that he wanted to have open primaries all around, which would basically permit the Republican Party to choose the Democratic presidential candidate. I think that process may be underway now. And Bernie also derived much of his electoral success during the primary season to the profoundly undemocratic caucus format as well. We have been looking at, again, the, quote, socialists, unquote, within the progressive wing of the Democratic Party. They have had a destabilizing effect for more moderate or centrist Democrats, and there appears to be a looming war within the Democratic Party. If I were Nancy Pelosi, I would take some of these incoming quote, radical, unquote, freshmen such as Ilhan Omar, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, about whom we will have much more to say in this and the next program. And I would teach them how to play chess, if they don't already know, and I suspect they don't, because this is a long game. It is interesting to me to see all of the press given to the, quote, radicals, unquote, or the, quote, socialists, unquote. And Ocasio-Cortez calls herself a democratic socialist. Bernie Sanders is an avowed socialist. People have not asked why this avowed socialist, meaning Bernie Sanders, was so contemptuous of a Democratic Party that he stayed out of it until shortly before the 2016 primary campaign season, and then resigned from the party 2 days after its after the convention. If he is so contemptuous of the Democratic Party, why is he running for the nomination? That is a degree of, I don't think it's a reach at all to call that cynical opportunism. That has gone unquestioned. Many young people, particularly young people who grew up in the wake of the financial collapse of 2008, something that a shot that I called in June of 2003, and for the record, 412, I stated unequivocally that it was deliberately intended. And a little over 5 years later, what I was predicting happened. But many young people growing up in the wake of that have become deeply disillusioned, properly so, too, with, quote, the system, unquote. And they have responded in polls favorably to what they have been told was socialism. In fact, what they are responding positively toward is what the Republican and the GOP right have termed, quote, socialism, which basically is not socialism per se, but social democracy, countries that are basically capitalist but have a strong social safety net. As Paul Krugman of the New York Times noted, the GOP at this stage of the game will turn anything to the left of eating poor people's babies as socialism. And what the young people are really favorable toward is not, quote, socialism, but what they have been told is socialism, and it is really social democracy. One of the things that I was struck by, as I said in our first show, was that AOC, who was getting all kinds of press, appeared to me from the beginning to be straight from central casting for the GOP. The GOP has had an open, explicit anti-immigrant sentiment. They are particularly contemptuous of immigrants from Latin America, legal and otherwise. They generally have a disparaging view of people of color, including Latinos and Latinas. And Ocasio-Cortez is, of course, a Latina. She also, of course, calls herself a socialist, and she is more than a little outspoken and is given to expressing herself through social media. Twitter is about as bad as anything I can think of. It is like spitting. You really are not going to have much of anything of substance communicated on Twitter. It is attenuated, superficial, shallow, fundamentally reactionary. It's like spitting, basically. And people who are habitués of the, you know, hashtag up yours, OMG, LOL, smiley face emoji, just aren't going to be given to much of anything that is deep or worthwhile. She has been described as something of a master of social media, or certainly in control of it, has something like 22 million Twitter followers, and has already, in my opinion, and that of quite a few other people, frankly, made a fool out of herself, although the so-called progressive sector in this country will not acknowledge that. She has done a lot of things that just will not hold water. She has only been in office for 3 months, and yet she gets tons of press. I think that she, too, is a ringer. And I think when you look at many of the creatures that have helped to elevate her to her present position, you will find that they are anything but real socialists. I will talk about her economic illiteracy, the Green New Deal, and some of the perhaps predictably thoughtless, certainly ill-considered things that she and her associates have had to say. I think that it is worth restating some things that I talked about in 1061, due to the fact that I had almost a half hour of pre-recorded material about the Armenian genocide and how that served as something of a signpost for Hitler's intent to commit genocide in World War II. In turn, perhaps, the Führer's attitude had been informed by the fact that powerful corporate interests, including those around Alan Dulles, who helped to organize the funding for the Third Reich and helped to channel much of that capital back at the end of World War II. Alan Dulles was one of the key figures in what I termed oleaginous diplomacy, meaning oil, all business, as they say in Texas. The corporate environment that obscured or outright denied the Turkish genocide against the Armenians in World War I is worth noting. But I think that given the importance of Sekhap Chakrabarty and Cenk Uygur in the ascension and operations of Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez and the left wing of the Democratic Party, which is already stirring things up, causing profound divisions, and is getting all of the press. Again, this woman, Ocasio-Cortez, has only been in office for 3 months, in that she and Ilhan Omar and St. Bernard, Bernie Sanders, are getting all of the press. The ascension, or the ascent, I should say, of Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez is due in no small measure, really in a fundamental way, by a person who was her campaign manager, who is now her chief of staff, who founded two political action committees that supported her, and on the board of one of which she sat, and that is a guy named Sekhap Chakrabarty. He is an Indian American, and by that I don't mean Native American, but he is a member of the Indian American community. They are the second fastest growing ethnic group in the U.S. at this time. There is a large, powerful, or influential would be a better word, Indian American community. Sekhap Chakrabarty was born in Fort Worth, Texas. He resides now in Knoxville, Tennessee. He is a Harvard-educated multimillionaire who earned his money in Silicon Valley and on Wall Street. Then in 2016, he got religion and attached himself to Bernie Sanders. He is the founder of Justice Democrats and of the co-founder of Brand New Congress. These organizations are part and parcel to the ascent of Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, and something that will come undoubtedly is of great delight to Karl Rove and Donald Trump and the Republicans, namely fractiousness. They are promoting fractiousness within the Democratic Party. Reviewing very quickly from Politico, February 4th of this year, 2019, by David Friedlander, Friedlander. There is going to be a war within the party. We are going to lean into it, unquote. The Justice Democrats helped get Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez elected, Who are they after next? Although it's Ocasio-Cortez who gets all the headlines, she arguably wouldn't be in Congress in the first place without the group Chakrabarty founded. Justice, Democrats, a new central player in the ongoing war for the soul of the Democratic Party. It was the Justice Democrats who recruited her in a quixotic campaign early on, providing a neophyte candidate with enough infrastructure to take down a party leader. And it is the Justice Democrats who see Ocasio-Cortez as just the opening act in an astonishingly ambitious plan to do nothing less than reimagine liberal politics in America and do it by whatever means necessary. You know, when you see something like this and do it by whatever means necessary, that should, your ears should prick up when you hear that, because that is a buzz term you want to be very careful of. Continuing, if that requires knocking out well-known elected officials and replacing them with more radical newcomers, so be it. And if it ends up ripping apart the Democratic Party in the process, well, that might be the idea. And again, I think that's why the far right, and I suspect elements of CIA are behind this. There is going to be a war within the party, and we are going to lean into it, unquote, said Waleed, W-A-L-W-E-D, Shahid, S-H-A-H-I-D, the group's spokesman. The group started meeting up even before the 2016 primary was over, and its members began looking ahead to the 2018 midterms, figuring that any Democratic president would need a very different Congress to get anything done. Along with Cenk Uygur, C-E-N-K, last name U-Y-G-U-R, the progressive activist and founder of the liberal media company The Young Turks, they started a group called Brand New Congress. And by way of underscoring how significant Justice Democrats, Brand New Congress, and in particular Sekha Chakrabarty are to the ascent and operations of Ocasio-Cortez. From Yahoo News, a Bloomberg News article by Bill Allison from March 8th of 2019, Ocasio-Cortez's campaign financing has critics crying hypocrisy. I would add that, you know, the right-wing attack machine is all over her already. That obviously is something that one needs to look at with a jaundiced and informed eye. At the same time, I think that a lot of what is being manifested by Sekha Chakrabarty and Cenk Uygur is just exactly what they want and need, and I am sniffing at the air. What this is about, and I'm going to excerpt this in a minute, is that Justice Democrats, both of them, and a Brand New Congress, both political action committees, and Justice Democrats LLC, or maybe, no, it's Brand New Congress LLC, that is a consulting company. Sekha Chakrabarty founded both PACs, co-founded Brand New Congress in connection with Cenk Uygur, and he heads up Brand New Congress LLC. Ocasio-Cortez was on the board of one of those organizations, and they are now coming under fire. It does not appear, from what I can tell, that they did anything illegal. It is, I think, somewhat questionable, and I expect, Ms. Ocasio-Cortez is of mixed Puerto Rican and Colombian heritage, as I understand. I'm sure she knows what a piñata is. I suspected from the beginning, and the more that time passes, I think she was deliberately elevated by the far right, and she is going to be the woman they love to hate. She is going to be an ideal propaganda target for the far right. A Latina, they hate Latinas, wants to abolish ICE. They hate Latin American immigrants, illegal and legal. And she calls herself a socialist, which is death in this country, and politically speaking. And maybe physically as well. Again, Ocasio-Cortez's campaign financing has critics crying hypocrisy. Democratic firebrand Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez rode into office railing against the influence of big money and hidden donors in U.S. elections. Yet the political operation that helped elect her to Congress was itself less than transparent, exposing her to attacks from conservative foes. The New York Congresswoman raised a hefty $2 million for her 2018 election while refusing to take money from business-related political action committees. Of that, 61% came from individuals giving less than $200, the highest rate of small-dollar funding among current U.S. House members. At the same time, now check this out, at the same time, Ocasio-Cortez's campaign committee and two political action committees paid almost $900,000 to a consulting company for campaign services, providing few details on what the money was for or who ultimately received it. The unorthodox arrangement: she sat on the board of one of the PACs, both of which were co-founded by the person who is now her chief of staff, that's Saikat Chakrabarty, who also ran the consulting company, appears to have taken advantage of gaps in the law, including the low level of detail that campaigns and political action committees are required to provide about their spending. The intricate ties and the lack of transparency have opened her to charges of hypocrisy and prompted complaints to the Federal Election Commission by conservative groups, though the allegations may amount to little more than paperwork violations. Ocasio-Cortez, in a tweet, called the complaints bogus and said, quote, "This is how the misinformation machine works, folks," unquote. David Mitrani, M-I-T-R-A-N-I, a lawyer for Ocasio-Cortez, the PACs, and the company, in a statement said any implication, quote, "that these entities in any way operated with less than full transparency or in some way to skirt the law are absolutely and unequivocally false." Well, again, it doesn't appear to me that there was anything illegal. I think this is, given her public persona, an untidy arrangement, and it definitely underscores how sinful Saikat Chakrabarty, who I'm really at this point far more interested in than Ocasio-Cortez, is to her political gravitas. Continuing, the complaint getting the most attention was brought March 4th by the National Legal and Policy Center, a right-leaning nonprofit focusing on ethics issues. The nub of the charge is that Ocasio-Cortez and the two PACs, Brand New Congress and Justice Democrats, again, both co-founded by Saikat Chakrabarty, her campaign manager and her chief of staff, violated federal election law in paying $885,735 to the company Brand New Congress LLC. That's the consulting firm headed up by, drumroll please, fanfare, Saikat Chakrabarty. The PACs raised that money from individual donors. The complaint says the arrangement hid the true purpose and actual recipients of the money. Again, it doesn't appear to me that anything illegal happened here. I'm not an expert on campaign law. It is, however, given the stances she has taken, altogether inappropriate, I think. Well, it is tacky, and I think she can get ready for a whole lot more of this sort of thing. Now, noting again the tremendous amount of press she is getting, and Ilhan Omar is getting, and Bernie Sanders, there was a letter to the New York Times following an article about how uncomfortable many moderate Democrats are feeling, saying, well, thank God there was finally an article in the New York Times about moderate Democrats. Well, that, I think that letter was right to the point. Another thing that should be noted is that the Democrats assumed control, regained control of the House of Representatives, not because of the Ocasio-Cortezes or the Ilhan Omars or the radicals, but because moderate centrist Democrats were able to get elected in previously pro-Trump or districts that had gone for Donald Trump in 2016, not because of the radicals. Something I have suspected. Ocasio-Cortez is someone who grew up with mobile technology and is adept at social media. One of the things we're going to be talking about, the growth of the internet, social media, and the intel community. We have noted, however, that one of the decisive things in the 2016 campaign were the machinations of Cambridge Analytica and PLC, a British firm that specializes in counterinsurgency research and activity. One of the things that they were doing was scouring social media using AIs, artificial intelligences, to basically acquire a detailed database and using algorithms to achieve a high degree of accurate information or accuracy about voters who were using social media. We should note that once again, the Cambridge Analytica team is on deck for Donald Trump, as we looked at in For the Record 139, very briefly from Texas Public Radio, although Cambridge Analytica is now out of business. I guess one could say, meet the new boss, same as the old boss, from Texas Public Radio of February 5th of 2019 by Paul Flahive, or Flahive, F-L-A-H-I-V-E. Cambridge Analytica alum to run another San Antonio-based firm. Parscale, or Parscale, P-A-R-S-C-A-L-E, Digital, a San Antonio-based digital marketing firm best known for its namesake and former owner Brad Parscale, or Parscale, President Donald Trump's 2020 campaign chairman. Again, Parscale Digital, a San Antonio-based digital marketing firm best known for its namesake and former owner Brad Parscale, President Donald Trump's 2020 campaign chairman, is now being run by a former executive at Cambridge Analytica. Cambridge Analytica, the now-defunct data analysis company known for working on President Trump's 2016 campaign, declared bankruptcy in 2018 after news broke that data from more than 80 million Facebook users was shared with it. Matt Arshkowski was head of product for Cambridge Analytica before forming Dataproprio in San Antonio with at least three other Cambridge Analytica alums, including its chief data scientist, David Wilkinson. Oskowski, O-C-Z-K-O-W-S-K-I, will take on the dual role running Parscale and Dataproprio, which are both owned by Cloud Commerce. Brad Parscale sits on the board of parent company Cloud Commerce. So again, meet the new boss, same as the old boss. Now, I think this is interesting because it is a safe bet that as AOC was gaining momentum for running for Congress, she was sharing her views and probably her picture via Instagram, which is owned by Facebook, at length and in detail with a great many people. That would have come to the attention, to put it mildly, of the AIs that were scouring Facebook and social media for Cambridge Analytica and for the Trump people and the far right, and also elements of the intel community as well. I suspect that AOC was identified early on as an ideal political campaign pinata, or political propaganda pinata would be a better way of putting it, early on by the Cambridge Analytica artificial intelligences that were scouring social media, and it is the safest of bets that they had reams of information about AOC from those very same social media. I find that more than a little interesting because, again, and I want to recap this, when one takes a look at Sekhar Chakraborty and Cenk Uygur, his co-founder with Brand New Congress, and again, Chakraborty was AOC's campaign manager. He is her chief of staff. He organized the co-founded Justice Democrats and Brand New Congress. AOC used to sit on the board of one of those. They gave money to Brand New Congress LLC, a consulting company headed up by Sekhar Chakraborty. And Sekhar Chakraborty, again, an Indian American, has been not only photographed, but did, frankly, in and of itself, a fairly eloquent defense of AOC when she began to be targeted by the right and by other people, and much of that criticism, I think, was absolutely valid. The things coming from people on her general side of the aisle. Sekhar Chakraborty has been doing appearances with a T-shirt containing the image of Subhas Chandra Bose. That's Subhas Chandra, and last name Bose. Subhas Chandra Bose was an Indian nationalist, at one point an ally of Mahatma Gandhi, again killed by the RSS, the parent organization of the BJP. And Tulsi Gabbard, Narendra Modi is Prime Minister of India and is from the BJP. And his elements have been networking with Tulsi Gabbard, part of the Sanders Institute. Bernie Sanders' prospective vice presidential candidate, Tulsi Gabbard, put Sanders' name into nomination at the 2016 Democratic Convention. She is viewed with great favor by former Trump Chief of Staff Steve Bannon, who actually interviewed her at one point for a potential cabinet position. Tulsi Gabbard is basically a left-cover Hindutva fascist. And I noted that, again, there is one of the things I want, I'm rambling a little bit, but one of the things I have wondered about, given the position of people like Tulsi Gabbard in the Sanders cosmology, so to speak, and given the fact that in AOC's district, or the district she represents, that is Parkchester in the Bronx, used to be a working-class and lower-middle-class Jewish neighborhood, now it is largely Latin and Indian-American, meaning, again, not Native American, but Indians. I wondered if there may have been a link between BJP/Modi/RSS, Hindutva fascist-leaning Indian-Americans, and the ascent of Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez. Well, Sekhar Chakraborty was doing appearances with a T-shirt bearing the face of Subhas Chandra Bose. Subhas Chandra Bose was an Indian nationalist leader who, like many nationalists in the 30s and 40s in areas that were seeking to shed colonial domination by the European powers that had colonized them, allied with the Axis. Again, Subhas Chandra, Chandra Bose, Bose, like the hi-fi speakers or stereo speakers, he was an Axis ally. He was viewed with great favor by Adolf Hitler, networked with Heinrich Himmler. His fighting forces were ultimately absorbed into the Waffen-SS. He died ostensibly in a plane crash in 1945. Many people have speculated that he faked his own death and continued to work underground. If so, there is a food for thought post that I will link. He almost certainly has done so as part of what I have called the underground right, and we're going to come back to that. Subhas Chandra Bose is not a name that most people know. An Indian American, however, would damn bloody well know who Subhas Chandra Bose is. He is very well known in India. Who is he? From the International Business Times of March 6th of 2012, Palash R. Ghosh, P-A-L-A-S-H-R, period, G-H-O-S-H, Hindu Nationalists, Historical Links to Fascism and Nazism. During a speech to Indian military officers and Indian nationalist Subhas Chandra Bose, who was present in Dresden, Germany in 1943, Hitler himself said, "You are fortunate having been born in a country of glorious cultural traditions and a colossal manpower. I am impressed by the burning passion with which you and your Netaji, N-E-T-A-J-I, Bose, seek to liberate your country from foreign domination. Your Netaji's status is even greater than mine. While I am the leader of 80 million Germans, he is the leader of 400 million Indians. In all respects, he is a greater leader and a greater general than myself. I salute him, and Germany salutes him. It is the duty of all Indians to accept him as their Führer and obey him implicitly. I have no doubt that if you do this, his guidance will lead India very soon to freedom." That began Hitler, lauding Subhas Chandra Bose, who was in attendance along with some of the officers of his formation, the Indian Legion, which ultimately became part of the SS. From Wikipedia, there is a picture that will be in the written description for these programs when it is published, of Subhas Chandra Bose networking with, schmoozing with Heinrich Himmler, Reichsführer SS. Of the Indian Legion, Wikipedia: the Indian Legion, officially the Free India Legion, or Infantry Regiment 950, and later the Indian Volunteer Regiment of the Waffen-SS, was a military unit raised during the Second World War in Nazi Germany. Intended to serve as a liberation force for British-ruled India, it was made up of Indian prisoners of war and expatriates in Europe. Because of its origins in the Indian independence movement, it was known as the Tiger Legion and the Azad Hind Fauj. That's A-Z-A-B, second word capital H-I-N-D, capital, third word capital F-A-U-J as in John. Initially raised as part of the German army, it was part of the Waffen-SS from August 1944 on. Indian independence leader Subhas Chandra Bose initiated the Legion's formation. And Bose also was networking with Karl Haushofer, one of the dominant philosophical and tactical influences on Adolf Hitler. A number of observers believe that it may have been Karl Haushofer, a master of geopolitics, who actually authored Mein Kampf while Hitler was in Landsberg prison. A good understanding of how many of these third world nationalist leaders ultimately came to be affiliated with fascism can be gleaned from a consummately important book called Dreamer of the Day, Francis Parker Yockey and the Post-War Fascist International, authored by the brilliant Kevin Coogan. It is not an easy read, but it is worth doing. It's copyright 1999 by Otano Media Incorporated, and there is good discussion of Subhas Chandra Bose. In its struggle to break British dominance, German military intelligence also looked to nationalist independence movements in the Middle East, Asia, and Ireland. After World War I, Haushofer continued to support these anti-British groups. In the 1930s, Indian nationalist leader Subhas Chandra Bose, whose Indian National Army later received military support in World War II from both Germany and Japan, was a correspondent for the Zeitschrift für Geopolitik, Haushofer's publication. That's capital Zeitschrift, für, F-U-R, capital G-E-O-P-O-L-I-T-I-K. And again, most people would know most Americans know nothing about Subhas Chandra Bose. However, the alt-right blogosphere has been all over this. It was also on Fox News, just as Botox McConnell was lambasting Ilhan Omar for anti-Semitism. And as I said, and for the record, 1061, I doubt that Fox News people would know who Subhas Chandra Bose was. But Indians sure as bloody hell know who he was, and there is no way, no way Sekhar Chakrabarty is what he professes to be and showing up with a Subhas Chandra Bose T-shirt. Apparently he does that quite a bit. I think that he sent out that Instagram post on Twitter, or he sent a link on Twitter to an Instagram post to deliberately prime the pumps of the far right. Again, if he were what he professes to be, he might have had a Gandhi T-shirt on. No way does he have Subhas Chandra Bose on the T-shirt. And he is out there trying to crusade on behalf of the downtrodden. Is this Fort Worth, Texas-born Knoxville, Tennessee resident, multimillionaire from Silicon Valley and Wall Street, wearing Subhas Chandra Bose T-shirt? Thank you again. CENK, last name capital UYGUR, is the co-founder of Brand New Congress that is already promising a war within the Democratic Party, and we're going to lean into it, unquote. Just what Karl Rove wants. Just what Donald Trump wants. And Trump is already lambasting the Democrats as socialists. Chink Uyghur has a history of denying the Armenian genocide. That isn't good either. To put it mildly, most Americans know nothing about the Armenian genocide. It is very important. Cenk Uygur might be a Turkish nationalist along the lines of the National Action Party and Arpaslan Türkeş. Might be an alumnus of the Grey Wolves. He might actually be a Uyghur, which have a Turkish ethnic group, a Turkophone group within China that have been a major focal point of CIA and NATO agitation for decades. They also have alliances with elements of Al-Qaeda, as well as the secular pan-Turkish fascist Grey Wolves. From the blog Why Evolution is True of April 26th of 2014, a post, after years of denying the Armenian genocide, Cenk Uygur now admits he doesn't know enough about it to say. And in 1991, while at the University of Pennsylvania, Uygur wrote an article for the Daily Pennsylvanian, the student newspaper, called Historical Fact or Falsehood, which is straight-out genocide denialism, imputing false claims of genocide to Armenian demands for land and money. An excerpt. And again, this is the co-founder of Brand New Congress, educated at the University of Pennsylvania, which, like Harvard, is part of the Ivy League. Hence, this is Cenk Uygur writing here, hence, once you really examine the history of the time, it becomes apparent that the allegations of an Armenian genocide are unfounded. So the question arises of why the Armenians would bother to conjure up such stories and even go so far as committing approximately 200 acts of terrorism since 1973 to further their cause, resulting in countless deaths and injuries to government officials and civilians. The answer is that they want their demands met. Their demands are that they receive close to one half of the land of the Republic of Turkey for a new Greater Armenia, and that every Armenian claiming to be injured by the alleged genocide be compensated with cash reparations. That is why every year they push the U.S. Congress to pass a bill declaring the Armenian genocide an historical fact. Fortunately, every year it is defeated because of the courage of people such as the 69 professors who wrote in to explain the truth of the matter. In a letter to Salon in 1999, he again argued that there was no evidence for that genocide. Quote, "Every non-Armenian scholar in the field believes it is an open question whether this event was a genocide. Is it the claim of the article that all of these people are tainted by the tentacles of the Turkish government? If not, then why is it not pointed out that no one outside of the, quote, Armenian position, unquote, believes it is a genocide? Why is it assumed that the Turkish studies side, unquote, has the burden of proof in overturning the verdict of Turkish guilt? It is because of the underlying assumption that despite what these people in Turkish studies, unquote, say, there must have been a genocide." And he goes on, basically he now says he just doesn't know. This dog won't hunt. If he were some ignoramus or some relatively uneducated, you know, Grey Wolf alumnus from Istanbul, one might perhaps be able to say, well, that is the ideology. This is a University of Pennsylvania educated guy who, along with, say, with Subhas Chandra Bose aficionado, Sekhat Chakrabarty, is the founder or one of the driving forces behind AOC. This is very suspicious. But most Americans now, well, most Americans don't know jack at this point, but Americans essentially know nothing about the Armenian genocide, and they really don't know much of anything about India either. I think much of the acceptance and the plaudits that have been directed at Tulsi Gabbard have just been ignorant progressives who, frankly, are viewing things through an Orientalist perspective. They look at Tulsi Gabbard and say, oh, she's a Hindu and she's a woman, the downtrodden of the earth are rising up together and marching forward. And they don't look at the fact that, well, she's actually had a lot to do with arranging Narendra Modi's trip to the U.S. and was networking with the Sangh, the RSS, in India. And she's part of the Hare Krishna cult. And in our program in 1062, we recap for the record 991. And Prabhupada, the guru and founder of the Hare Krishna cult, is an antediluvian reactionary whose views are about as far out there as one could be. He openly favors dictatorship and is anti-Semitic, anti-black, anti-female, and just about every other damn thing as well. And I think the ignorance of Americans toward, say, the likes of Subhas Chandra Bose, certainly it is not a name one hears, again, is due to Orientalism. I don't think the so-called progressive sector has much of an understanding at all of India. And again, I think they, when they look at Indian Americans or India, they see things through an Orientalist lens. It'd be something like one of those old, the consciousness of the average so-called progressive vis-a-vis India, I think, would almost be like one of those corny old travelogue filler newsreels from the 30s or 40s. Our next stop is the teeming subcontinent of India, home of the Taj Mahal, one of the eight wonders of the world. Its gleaming white dome shines brightly in the hot tropical sun. Here's a snake charmer, one of the most mysterious of India's many attractions, as he plays his flute, a deadly cobra rises from its basket and sways to the rhythm of the music. And here's Gunga Din, the elephant boy, with his pet elephant, Bernie Sanders. Bernie Sanders is, in a way, I think, a pet elephant, a GOP elephant. Americans have no understanding of India. The progressive Americans really do not have any understanding of India. So when they see Tulsi Gabbard networking with Narendra Modi, they don't think much about it. Oh, she's a Hindu. Isn't that beautiful? And the Hindu woman, oh, how charming. And they don't understand what Sekhar Chakrabarty's sporting a Subhas Chandra Bose T-shirt means at all. And as I explained last week, the obfuscation and outright denial of the Armenian Genocide is something that, really is very significant. Again, it would be one thing if Cenk Uygur was some ignoramus from Turkey, but he is not. He is from the University of Pennsylvania. And when we see a denier of the Armenian Genocide and someone who has a taste for Subhas Chandra Bose being two of the driving forces behind the, quote, socialists, unquote, vying for control of the Democratic Party, and Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez in particular, and St. Bernard, I think we need to take a very close look at that. Again, one should not discount the significance of having someone like that, or people like that, behind not just AOC, but others as well. Again, I don't think AOC herself has any sinister intent. I think she has been identified rather like acquiring a target and elevated by forces who ultimately intend to use her for propaganda purposes. I don't think there's anything sinister about her intent at all. She is, however, immature, profoundly so, and is very outspoken and very full of herself as well. And I think she is going to end up doing a tremendous amount of damage to the Democratic Party. By way of understanding how significant the presence of Indian fascist elements, whether Hindutva fascist, along the lines of Narendra Modi, the BJP, and the RSS, and also perhaps the likes of Subhas Chandra Bose, are in American society, I'm going to go back and revisit some information from the conclusion of For the Record 1020. Narendra Modi, in September of 2015, gave a talk at the SAP Center right here in San Jose, California, the capital of Silicon Valley. And he basically led the crowd in a throaty chant, which basically, India, my motherland, is great. It is the Hindutva fascist equivalent of Sieg Heil or the Italian fascist Duce, Duce, Duce. This again from the For the Record program number 1020. Concluding, we talk about Rondev leading a crowd in a chant that goes, Bharat Mata Ki Jai, and I'm butchering this, he shouted. The crowd raised their arms and pumped their fists as they chanted the words, India, my motherland, is great, that had become a defining slogan of the Hindu nationalist movement. In September of 2015, Narendra Modi visited the U.S. and gave a speech at the SAP Center right here in San Jose. As we looked at, Tulsi Gabbard helped to arrange the details of Narendra Modi's trip to the U.S., working in conjunction with the BJP and perhaps the RSS as well. From the India West Online, there is a complete text and video of Narendra Modi's speech at the SAP Center, and he concluded his speech with, please repeat after me, Bharat Mata Ki Jai. Say it loudly. I want the voice to boom all the way to India. Bharat Mata Ki Jai. And the audience repeats, Bharat Mata Ki Jai. And I'm sure I'm butchering the pronunciation, but here, however, is Narendra Modi, not in India and not with Baba Ramdev, but at the SAP Center right here in San Jose, Silicon Valley.
Bharat Mata Ki Awaaz Hindustan Tak Pahunchani Chahiye. Bharat Mata Ki Bharat Mata Ki Bharat Mata Ki Bharat Mata Ki Bharat Mata Ki.
That again from the Narendra Modi speech at the SAP Center in September of 2015. That again from For the Record 1020, and that was Narendra Modi, not in India, but right here in the USA. The point being that in the second fastest growing ethnic group in the US, Indian Americans, there is a significant Hindutva presence. We are going to take a look not only again at some of the people around Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez and the ill-considered Green New Deal as it was issued. I personally think that a new Green Deal is fundamentally important. In fact, I think a Green New Deal, which should be just that, not including a wish list from a bunch of radicals, but something that will radically transform industry and environmentalism on the earth before it is too late, which it soon will be, is fundamental. It is too important to be mucked up, and it has been by the likes of AOC, Sikat Chakrabarty, and others. We're going to take a look at some of the other people around Bernie Sanders, around AOC, something of a preview from the Washington Post of August 1st of 2018, article by Dana Milbank, M-I-L-L-B-A-N-K, in For the Record 1022 and 1023, as well as For the Record program number 1008, among others. We took a look at Paul Manafort, almost certainly a U.S. intelligence officer, and his work to try, successfully as it turned out, to maneuver Ukraine from the Russian into the Western orbit. He was working with Viktor Yanukovych, and someone else he was working with, of course, Paul Manafort, in addition to being almost certainly a U.S. intelligence officer working with the Habsburg Group, he also was Donald Trump's 2016 campaign manager, a guy who was Bernie Sanders' chief strategist in that same 2016 campaign, a guy named Tad Devine, D-E-V-I-N-E, was working with Paul Manafort on behalf of Viktor Yanukovych in 2010. The deep cynicism of Bernie Sanders' chief strategist. Tad Devine, during his run as chief strategist for the Bernie Sanders presidential campaign, railed against the corrupting influence of money in politics. Skipping down. Thanks to Robert S. Mueller III's prosecution of Paul Manafort, the former Trump campaign chairman and sometime business associate of Devine, we now have an unusual glimpse into the role the Democratic ad man had in electing and preserving the power of Ukraine's Viktor Yanukovych. Although, again, Yanukovych was pro-Russian, he was negotiating with Paul Manafort and the Habsburg Group to basically sign the EU Association Agreement. One of his advisors in around 2010-2011, Tad Devine, was the chief strategist for Bernie Sanders' 2016 campaign. Paul Manafort, the probable, I would say, certain U.S. intelligence officer with whom he was working for Yanukovych, was Donald Trump's 2016 campaign manager. More about that, however, in our next program. This concludes For the Record program number 1063, Socialists for Trump and Hitler, Part 3, being recorded on March 19th of the year 2019. I'm Dave Emery. Have fun.